Hello, and welcome to Writers Group Therapy.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Roshni. We're writers helping writers with whatever writing ailments you might have.
Whether it's related to your craft or your career, we can help.
Are you ready for your session?
The doctors are in. Hey, Roshni.
Hey, Tom. What's up?
Well, we got a great pair of showrunners on the show today. Of all the showrunners we've had on Writers Group Therapy, this team, they're Emmy-nominated, Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher, have one of the most interesting starting points, Twitter. Yeah, they were the team that turned the Stuff, My Dad Says, Twitter account into the award-winning Warner Brothers sitcom of the same name. And now they're running two writers' rooms, Abbott Elementary on ABC and HBO Max's Harley Quinn, the animated series. So this is going to be really interesting. So Justin, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks. I don't think the term award-winning has ever had to do more work than when you say award-winning Stuff My Dad Says.
Well, it did win an award. It did win an award.
What did it win?
You don't even know what award you won, huh?
Can we tell you, it won the People's Choice Award.
That's right.
It did. You won the People's Choice Award. And I think it's one of the most important awards to win.
Well, it was just because Pat's mom made her whole office vote for it over and over.
You can vote as many times as you like for a People's Choice Award. And I do believe that she had carpal tunnel syndrome that award season.
Oh, okay. I think, you know, it was one season, but it was a great season. Will Sasso and Will Shatner were a great partner, a great team, and the jokes were just hilarious. They kept coming nonstop. I thought it was underrated. I watched every episode of it. So
wow,
so I'm a fan. And I didn't even know you guys worked on it until this, you know, opportunity to interview you guys came up. So I'm like, wow, that's cool. Well, let's start off with, how did you two start working together, coming up with Stuff? I don't want to bleep this, so I'm just going to use that word. Stuff My Dad Says. And then how did you, you know, eventually get into doing, you know, these shows for HBO and ABC?
Pat, you want to take it?
Sure, I'll start. We met each other in the summer of 2001, interning together at a company called A Band Apart. It still exists in some other version. It's Quentin Tarantino's production company. And we worked in the now defunct commercials and music video department.
Oh, interesting.
And we were still in school. Justin was down at San Diego State. I was at University of Texas at Austin, but we spent the summer in LA. And we were both living in Westwood over by UCLA. And at the time, there were a bunch of movie theaters there. And Justin was living in a condemned fraternity house of which he was not a member, but found some cheap rent, and it was basically the house from Fight Club, and so he didn't want to be there naturally very much. So we'd go to movies together, and the first movie we saw together was Pootie Tang, and we bonded over our mutual love of that film, so we just stayed in touch. And, you know, then I moved out to LA in about 2002, just in 03. And, you know, we just kept like making stuff together, on the side. And, you know, we directed a really terrible, slasher movie, that we didn't write, but we shot in 5 days. So I was proud just to have finished a film. And, you know, just kept making stuff and trying to, you know, enter scripts into like writing fellowship competitions, that sort of thing, and not having a ton of luck. We had like one feature script get optioned by a producer at Fox, but it went nowhere, and you know, it certainly wasn't enough to make a living. And then I will pass the torch on to Justin, who will pick us up around 2009, I would say.
Thanks, Pat. Good segue.
What a team you guys are. You get your like segues worked out and everything.
Well, you can hear from this interview that we've taken 1,000 general meetings in our life and have answered this question in some form or the next. So in 2009, I was working at a online humor publication, and they said that I could work from anywhere, and I decided to. I was dating my girlfriend at the time, and she lived in San Diego. I was living in LA, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna move down there and surprise her because I can work from anywhere, and I was like, hey, I gave up my apartment in LA and then surprised her. We broke up like 15 minutes later.
Oh my God.
And I know where to live. I moved in with my dad and mom and I started writing down some of the sort of more what I found was like weirdly funny things he said. And my friend was like, you should start a Twitter feed with all these things. I didn't even know what Twitter was really. But I did. And then that Twitter feed took off and really kind of helped launch our careers because we sold that to Warner Brothers and it became a sitcom on a multi-camera sitcom on CBS. And that was the thing that kind of launched our career. The show up one season was done and we weren't the showrunners of it, but we sort of like worked hard, kept our heads down and we kept working from there.
So it gave you your into the writer's room is what you're saying.
Yes. That was our into the writer's room. That was our first break into the writer's room.
That is so crazy. That is like a true Hollywood story of like, I lived in a warehouse and like, you know, all that stuff. I had to move in with my dad again. And like, oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Well, the funniest part about it was that like, I had a job. I had a good job actually when mm-hmm. I moved back to my parents. I did it because I didn't know if I was going to go back to LA or not. But when the story started getting buzzed and getting reported everywhere, it was like, this 28-year-old loser has no job, no life. It was just living with his dad. I was like, oh no. It was like he just got dumped by his girlfriend for being a loser. It was way more complex than that.
You're like, guys, I'm not really that bad, okay? It's just for the show.
Yeah. So Patrick owes his success to Justin's failure.
That's right. And every day Justin never lets me forget it.
Oh no.
Right.
Oh man. So how do you two divvy up responsibilities? Like, is someone better at, you know, doing the first draft of scripts? Is someone better at managing the writer's room? Like, how do you guys decide who does what?
Yeah. I mean, in terms of show running, it's like, it's evolved over the years. We got to run our first show around 2013, which was this very short-lived Fox single camera comedy called Surviving Jack. But that was like where we were sort of thrown into the fire. We were doing this project with Bill Lawrence and he had like three shows on the air. So he couldn't just like work on Surviving Jack the whole time. And so we sort of, you know, it became this gift because we got to, you know, cut our teeth on this big broadcast sitcom starring Christopher Maloney, who's wonderful. And we continue to work with to this day, but like we started out like not knowing how to divvy stuff up. And so we just sort of did everything together and it's horribly inefficient. And now that, you know, we have families, we're in our 40s, we value rest. we know that that's the secret to longevity. We are much more open and willing and glad to have to be able to divide and conquer, I would say. And so now Justin is, I think it's fair to say, like he's in the room like almost 100% of the time. So from pre-production through, through production, Justin is running the writer's room and I'm more of like a floater. I really enjoy, being on set once we get into production. So I'm there in the writer's room full time, like for pre-production. But then once we kick into gear, I'm on set quite a bit and sort of shuttle back and forth. And then also once post begins, I'm a little bit more active in that as well. And, I moved out here wanting to like direct TV commercials. And so I think that's always, you know, the visual component, being on set, working with actors, all of that good stuff is something that's like, it has always interested me. And so that's kind of where I feel like I can contribute in a unique way with this partnership. So, you know, whether that's being on set at Abbott or like running post on Harley Quinn or animated show, you know, that's stuff that I kind of focus on once we're like up and running with production.
That brings up a good question. Working on animation, working on live action, completely different workflows. How do you guys manage that? Or was it just something you had to learn to do?
We definitely had to learn how to do animation because we had no experience in it whatsoever. I remember we walked into our offices the first week of Harley, and there were these, like, there had been an animated show in there before us, and there was a whiteboard, and it had all these, like, steps on it, which were the process of animation, and we were about to erase it, and we're like, actually, maybe we should just keep that up so, like, we know what to do, because we had no real experience. But I think since now having done several seasons of the show, and also, by the way, we ran the first three seasons of the show, but we turned the fourth season over to, we elevated a writer on staff named Sarah Peters, who's super funny and talented, and she ran the fourth season, and we kind of executive produced it. But I think, you know, animation moves much slower. You, from writing a script to having a finished colored episode of the show that's mixed and done, is around 18 months. Whereas we're writing an episode of Abbott, and then probably 6 weeks later, that episode's just done completely. So yeah, it's much, much different workflows that you can kind of balance out when you kind of know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Do the two shows allow you to kind of work on both equally, or do the schedules, like, allow you to, like, kind of be on one show at a time, or do they overlap?
It's a little bit, it's imbalanced, right? Like, so when we ran the first season of Abbott, it was like 85% Abbott all the time. And, you know, the other 15% was like doing some post work on Harley season three, let's say. And we also, Justin and I co-wrote with Dean Laurie a Valentine's Day special for Harley that we did during Abbott. But, like, given the, you know, the schedule of a broadcast comedy, it really, like, once the trains are running, that's like, that's all you're hanging on for dear life, and just to, you know, make your days and your deliverables on schedule and all of that stuff. So it was kind of unfeasible for us to also run, you know, season four of Harley while contributing to Abbott in a meaningful way. But then it, like, also you had asked about just like our, how we divvy things up with, like, writing, you know, now in the position that we're in, like, the, like, actual draft writing that we do, it's really limited to, like, certain pilots. You know, the rest of the time, like, with Abbott, Quinta wrote that pilot, you know, we helped her break the story, but she wrote the drafts, and with very few exceptions, we're just sort of, you know, we're writing producers that are contributing to, you know, breaking stories and whatnot. But, like, we're not going off and writing a ton of drafts anymore. Justin and I just finished writing a feature. And so that was cool to, like, get back in the room where it was, like, just us breaking story and writing drafts. But I think with that too, same deal, as we've kind of aged, we're a little less precious about, like, you know, one person standing over the other guy's shoulders while he's typing and that sort of thing. So it is a lot more, like, case in point, the Harley Valentine's Day special. And that was three writers of record, us and Dean Laurie. Like, we literally Frankenstein together a script from an outline that was very detailed that the three of us kind of hammered out, like, over Zoom. But then we went off, and it was a six act story. It's like a 45 minute episode of TV, and each of us took two acts, and we just, you know, literally merged them in final draft and then all read it through, and we're kind of actually shocked that it was coherent. But I think it was a tribute to, like, the outline being so detailed that it was almost like dummy proof for all of us. So yeah, it's nice that there's two of us. That's the bottom line.
I was actually going to ask, so what's the average size of your writing rooms?
Well, we generally like to have between 8 and 11 writers. Abbott has about 11, including me and Pat and Quinta, maybe 12. And Harley, when we were running Harley, was around 8 or 9, including me and Pat.
Wow, that is a lot of people. So then, I kind of want to know, what makes you want to bring a certain person on your staff? I mean, obviously, they're good writers, but when you're interviewing people for your rooms, what qualities do they have that you're like, okay, I got to work with that person?
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost, it's like, do I want to hang out with this person for 8 to 10 hours a day? That's a real sort of prerequisite, because so much of, I think it was a thing that I didn't really understand going into television, like, how much of it isn't just, like, writing, it's just talking. Like, you're writing television you're almost never in a room by yourself, you know, just like banging your head against a blank piece of paper, right? Like it is total collaboration. It's just one giant conversation. And yeah, it comes down to, like who do you want to be in, spend basically a year of your life with? That's a huge one. And then it starts to get into like, you know, what unique sort of talents does this person bring to the project?
Yeah, I think, oh, go ahead.
If they're on Abbott Elementary, you probably want to know if they have kids.
Well, you know, funny is most of the people on Abbott Elementary don't. I have kids. Pat has kids.
Really?
Ryan Rubenstein is right around. He has kids.
I mean, you guys have a lot of kids on that show.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the staff are like uncles and aunts, but like, you know, or I know when we met with people, a lot of the writers had like teachers in their family or educators in their family. And so there was a little bit of a touchstone there, but yeah, you might be surprised to know that there not a lot of parents on the staff.
But I think one of the things also, you know, and what we're looking for is like someone who's conversationally funny, you know, because the writer's room is just a long conversation. It's about 8 hours a day. And we're less sort of looking for someone who comes in and has like, I have four story ideas and here's what they are. And more someone who just like in the course of a conversation can move with the flow of the conversation, be funny, like tell a story that this conversation prompts by accident. You know, so I think that that's really important for us.
Yeah. And then I think on the, like the, with staff writers or like first time writers, we're really, I mean, most of the time we're working in comedy and we just want that person to be super, super funny, both on the page and just in conversation. We're not super worried yet about whether or not they have perfect structure, you know, that they're like a beautiful mind when it comes to narrative structure. That can come later.
Yeah. I think it's kind of like basketball, right? It's like you can teach someone the rules of basketball and how to move around without the ball, but you can't teach someone to jump higher or run faster or,
be coordinated.
Be stronger. Yeah, be more coordinated within reason. And so that's, I think, you know, we're looking for sort of like natural comedic ability.
Mm-hmm. And what do you look for in new projects that you want to develop or that you're considering?
That's a great question.
We're literally asking that now.
Yeah. It changes from year to year kind of based on like what our slate is or, you know, I think we're probably just a lot of fear-based decisions here over at Delicious Non-Sequitur Productions wanting to like, get into like hour long dramas. Cause we're just like, we don't want to be pigeonholed as a certain thing. Right. Like, it's so easy. I think a lot of people have stories. A lot of people in our position have stories about, you know, the industry kind of pigeonholing them as a certain thing based on, you know, whatever their last quote unquote hit was. And, you know, for us, we were gifted with the Harley Quinn. Like literally, like we got a call from Susan Rovner, who was running things over at Warner Brothers a few years back, and was like, "Do you guys want to do this R-rated serialized animated show about Harley?" Like, yes, absolutely. And then, like after that show came out, for like a brief moment, we were like the animation guys, and we were like, "Well, actually, we've been working in this industry for like, you know, 7 or 8 years or whatever it was, and we've never done animation before, but now we have." You know, that's the most high profile thing that we have. So I think it's, you know, a lot of it is just trying to vary the projects. But we just, I think too, it comes down to like, who do we want to work with? Is there, is there a cast member? Or, you know, like with Abbott, it came about because we had cast Quinta in this hour-long CW pilot that we did that was sort of like light sci-fi hour-long, and we had never met Quinta before in our lives. She walked into our casting offices and we were like, "Who is that?" And the casting director was like, "Wait, you don't know who that is?" We're like, "No." and she was we were like, "Well, we have to cast her." And you know, we shot this pilot up in Vancouver and then we just stayed friends, but we were like just completely floored by her talents, and we're like, you know, desperate to do something with her, and she wanted to do something with us. And then she brought Abbott to us actually as an animated thing, tying it back to us being kind of animation guys. And then one thing led to another, schedules didn't align. And then, you know, a year later or whatever it was, we were like, let's do it as a live action thing. And she was thinking the exact same thing. So I think a lot of it just comes down to our, our own personal greed of wanting to work with amazing talent and partners. So that's another, I think, kind of prerequisite for finding projects. Yeah, what am I missing, Justin?
Well, I think also, you know, for a long time, Pat and I were doing pilots and shows that were just kind of like what we thought the studio wanted and were not necessarily shows that Pat and I would watch. And so we kind of, right before Harley, we sort of made this mandate. We were like, look, I don't know how this will work, but let's try to make a pact to try and only do shows that we would watch. And we did, and that started with Harley, and we've kind of been able to keep true to that. So it's, in a weird way, it's sort of like our development slate is all shows Pat and I would want to watch. and as ridiculous and sort of like obvious as that seems, you'd be surprised how often in this business you're doing you're doing shows or movies that are like what the studio wants, but not something you would even watch. So we sort of tried to pivot away from that.
Yeah.
Speaking of what you want to do and who you want to work with, which do you like working for better, broadcast or streaming? Is it really not a big difference for you?
It really depends on the idea. Like Abbott, when Quintet brought us Abbott, Quintet was like, I want this to be a network show. Like it, there is no reason it cannot be a network show. I know people think like the cool kids are in streaming, but this can be a good, like this fits best on a network. I wanted to get the most amount of eyeballs possible because I think it's a broadly appealing show with broadly appealing themes. And so then we took it to Warner Brothers or took it to ABC, and there was two executives there, Aaron Werenberg and Wendy Steinhoff, who we've known forever, we've been friends with forever. And they got the show immediately. And so it was a dream developing the show with them. It was fantastic. Like, it was as good a process as you could possibly have doing something creative in Los Angeles. But then also, Harley Quinn has been like one of the most gratifying creative endeavors that either Pat and I have had in our entire careers. So, and that was with HBO Max, who was also incredibly supportive. So I think it just depends on the people you're working with and what fits the project the best.
Cool. So you guys are still, I still think of you guys as young because I'm a lot older than you guys, but we've done a lot in this industry. And, you know, over the last 10 or 15 years, what do you know now that you wish you'd known when you'd begun?
Two things that I can come to mind immediately for me is one is you don't need to make the hours in a writer's room ungodly, like long. You know, Abbott has, I would say, is probably the most ubiquitous, the most awarded thing that we've ever done. It's just like the most just sort of generally well-liked thing that we've ever done. And that's had the best hours of anything, maybe with the exception of Harley, but it has the best hours of anything we've ever worked on. I think, you know, it's important to us to spend time with our families, to have lives outside of work. And it's important for everyone else, be it, you know, the staff, the crew, the cast, everyone, you know, to have lives outside. I think, you know, getting that, being able to recuperate your energy and also just live your life and get ideas from living your life is super important. And so, you know, we came up in a world where comedy rooms thrived on, well, I don't know about thrive, but it was just kind of the standard operation to have insanely long hours. You know, I think the second show we worked on, you know, probably the average was like 11 o'clock at night. It's probably fair to say, like, and that's, you know, compared to Friends, that's like nothing. Like way back in the day, not that we worked on Friends, but, you know, you hear about those writers going home at like, you know, 2 in the morning or whatever, and then the poor support staff is there until like when the sun's coming up. It's like, when do you sleep? So that is completely unnecessary. I understand you get into a pickle or whatever and you need to put a little extra into it, but you can have humane hours. That's a huge one. And then the second one for me, like just personally, is like having to like repeat to myself that like, you are enough. and I will always struggle with like imposter syndrome, but I had like kind of debilitating imposter syndrome when we first started out. And I wish that myself, like right now, could go back and tell, you know, 29-year-old me that you're not a complete failure at this and it's going to get better. But fortunately, I had other writers around me who saw what I was going through and they did tell me that. So that kind of saved me. But those would be my two things.
I think my thing would just simply be to celebrate the small victories, no matter how small they are. Because I think there's just a lot of failure in this business. And for a while, I'd be like, after I sold a pilot or two, we would sell a pilot and I would feel like, oh, it's not going to go, or oh, we'll see what happens, or okay. And in reality, like, I feel like it's huge to sell a pilot. That's amazing. Like, you should celebrate it, to, you know, get a pilot made. Even crazier, celebrate it, to get it picked up, like all these steps along the way, like give yourself time to process the wins and feel good. Even if it's just like, I got a general meeting. Amazing. Like, that's your first one. Like, great. Go like celebrate. You're in the business, you know? So, and the other part of it, which is linked to this, is that, you know, there's a lot of failure and a lot of rejection, but rejection means you're in the business. Apathy, when no one is responding to you, no one's talking to you, that's hard. That's when, you know, you're like, am I in this business or am I not? So I think like not taking failure quite as hard.
Well, that's all really good advice. That's really good stuff. I'm glad you guys have a work-life balance kind of reality going on there, because you hear so many horror stories and it's nice to know that people in the business doing it are like, let's not be insane.
It's so true. I remember reading Phil Rosenthal's memoir, the creator of Everybody Loves Raymond, and he was talking about how at the end of a season, they would just kind of keep the writer's room going so that they would work year round so that they could just have like amazing hours and people could go live their lives. And then so much of that real life was pulled into the show. And that always stuck with me. And I was like, oh, that's how you do it. So like with Abbott, we'd start the writer's room a little bit early. We took a break. We weren't working year round. We did take a break, but for season two, we started the room a little bit early as a function of that. And also just keeping Quinta in the room as long as possible before we would go into production and then lose her for most days, cause she's playing Janine.
Yeah. That's a lot of work too, to be on screen and behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you guys are really super interesting. I hope we keep up with you when you have new projects coming up, because this has been really fun. Like I said, I thought this was going to be one of the most interesting interviews we've done, and it really has been. It's been great. If people want to follow you and keep up with what you're doing, where should they look?
The Warner Brothers lot, near the commissary mostly.
Okay, stalkers be forewarned. Yeah.
I'm at Justin_Halpern.
On everything?
Yes. I'm not great at social media, so my Instagram is mostly just my kids. And I think it's private. I can't even remember.
Yeah, it's private.
I love that Patrick knows that for you, Justin.
Yeah. I'm at PM Schumacher, and that's spelled with a C-K-E-R on the end, like Schumacher, on both Twitter and Instagram.
Cool. Great. Well, you guys, thank you so much for coming on the show. Everyone, do check out Abbott Elementary on ABC and Hulu, where I watch it, and Harley Quinn on HBO Max, soon to be just Max. And you guys, good luck with everything you're working on, and thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. This is fun.
Everyone, thanks so much for listening. Follow us on writersgrouptherapy.com and on Twitter and Instagram @WGTherapy. We will see you in a few weeks.